We are talking about evolution, and I have come through a first series, and beginning on series two, what we said before was that evolution is not seen in science. Now we're beginning to look at the arguments for evolution are outdated and often illogical. We've taken the fight to them here. We're saying, all right, what do you got and how do you prove it? And here's what they say, but they have just leaped to a conclusion, and a lot of situations, science has gone beyond their ability to say what they say. It's outdated and illogical. So what we're looking at today is something you probably were talking about at lunch, convergent evolution or intelligent design. No, you probably weren't talking about that. But what he's saying is that the evolutionists give an answer to a problem that we're going to be looking at, and they say, well, that's called convergent evolution. What it means is that here and there in the animal world, same type of things have evolved. And they say, well, that's called convergent evolution. The Christian looks at it and says, a much better argument is intelligent design. And when you look at what they're dealing with, you'll see that what they're saying can't be true. So when the same, we're looking at an ability or a feature in humans and animals, the same complex capability is found in unrelated organisms, so they're not in the evolutionary chain, they're not the mole that turned into a bat or something, they're just different things, but they have similar capabilities, which we'll explain in a moment. Yet they have these things, but you take the step back in their evolutionary development, according to these people, and their evolutionary ancestors didn't have any of that. It just happened at this stage. So they say, well, that's called a common need caused identical complexities to evolve. So even though they're not connected, evolutionary, they're not connected, they felt the same need, and evolution gave them the same complex thing. That's what they call convergent evolution. Now, let me give you some examples of this. Wings and flight. It occurs in some birds, not all, but ostrich, penguin, stuff like that. Insects, mammals, like bats, pterosaurs, the flying lizard, an extinct reptile. He also had wings and could fly. However, these capabilities have not been found in any of their so-called common ancestors. How did it just with them come to be flight? Another example of supposed convergent evolution are the three tiny bones in our ears. They're in the ears of mammals. It's called the stapes or the stirrup. Remember, it looks sort of like a half-round thing with a stirrup. The stirrup is where you put your foot in the saddle. The incus, which is then called the anvil, and the malleus, which maybe you recognize malleus as the hammer. So the eardrum is attached, and it moves like this, this moves this, and this moves that. So the three bones are linked together, the hammer, the anvil, and the stirrup, and I had a nice picture for you to see that. So if you look in somebody's ear, you might be able to recognize it. Oh, there it is. Now, it's a complicated thing. It's all hooked together in such a way to communicate the vibration of the eardrum and turn it into electrical energy that goes to the brain. So their complex arrangement and precise fit give mammals the unique ability to to hear a wide range of sounds. Now, evolutionists say that those bones evolved from the bones in a reptile's jaw. If so, the process must have occurred at least twice, but left no known transitional fossils. You only find it complete when it works. And they don't find anything where it was almost working, but didn't quite get there. This is not logical. According to them, everything should have advanced just micro bits at a time. See, we should have thousands upon thousands of these transitional stages until finally something clicked and then it became something. So evolutionists say that those bones evolved from the bones of a reptile's jaw, but we can't find any example of that. Thomas Rich wrote Independent Origins of Middle Ear Bones in Monotremes and Therians, and I have no idea what those are, in the magazine Science. They said, quote, the definitive mammalian middle ear evolved independently in living monotremes and therians. These are marsupials, where the baby is born into a pouch, and placentals, where they have a placenta in the womb. Sid Perkins wrote an article called Groovy Bones in Science News. He said this, quote, because of the complexity of the bone arrangement, these three bones, some scientists have argued that the innovation arose just once in a common ancestor of the three mammalian groups. Now, analyses of a jawbone from a specimen of Tynalophus trussliera, and that's a shrew-sized creature that lived in Australia about 115 million years ago, have dealt a blow to that notion. So they said, but we found one of those early ancestors of these things that ended up with hearing, and he didn't have it. So there was no evidence of evolution for these highly complex things. So the evolutionary claim leaves the unanswered question, how did the transitional organisms between reptiles and mammals hear during these millions of years? During the transition time, how did they hear? For mammals to hear, it requires the organ of Corti and complex, the wiring in the brain. No known reptile, the supposed ancestor of mammals, living or fossil, has anything resembling this amazing organ. So obviously, without the ability to hear, survival, and therefore reptile to mammal evolution, would cease. They had no ability to know if something was roaring up behind them. See? Is the ground shaking? Oh no, it's the dinosaur coming to eat me. See? Too late. So they say, well, given enough time, anything can happen. Okay. Supposing that a miracle, you don't like the word miracle, they say, we don't believe in miracles. How about an extremely unlikely event like that happened once? That requires strong evidence, or lacking evidence, faith, claiming that a similar miracle happened repeatedly requires either incredibly blind faith or a cause common to each event, such as a common designer, a compassionate God who said they need to hear. And so I haven't done it with these others, but I'm going to give them these three bones. So it's illogical to maintain that similarities between different forms of life always imply a common ancestor. If you see two things that are similar in two different animals, they say, well, that evolved from a common ancestor. In these cases, the wings and the hearing, both of these cases, there is no common ancestor to look to. It just shows efficient design. God says, I'm going to do this. Nilsson wrote, by this we have also proved that a morphological, a form-related similarity between organisms cannot be used as proof of a phylogenetic, an evolutionary relationship. The fact that they have similar things, he says, we have proven that that doesn't line them up at all. It is unscientific, this scientist says, to maintain that the morphology, the form, may be used to prove relationships and evolution of the higher categories of units. He says it does not prove. That's unscientific. We've checked it out. It does. It's not related. Jonathan Wells wrote, survival of the fakest, not fittest, in The American Spectator, 2001. He says this, but biologists have known for 100 years that homologous, similar structures, are often not produced by similar development pathways. And they have known for 30 years that they are often not produced by similar genes either. So there is no empirically demonstrated, some observable trait, mechanism to establish that homologies, similar things, are due to common ancestry rather than common design. Now, he's bringing up another point, and that is they have traced how the embryo of an animal develops certain things. And they don't always develop it from the same thing. It's not always the same genes. It's not always the same part of the embryo that becomes the similar thing. So you say, well, I see these same things in these animals. Yes, but in this animal, it comes from this part of the embryo, and in this animal, it comes from a completely different part. So that's not the same. It ends up looking the same, accomplishing the same, but it's not the same. So, and he says, they've known this for 100 years, and specifically for 30 years. In fact, where similar structures are known to be controlled by different genes or are developed from different parts of embryos, a common designer is a much more likely explanation than evolution. Now, we get into some proof in this situation. Gavin R. De Beer, formerly professor of embryology at University of London and director of the British Museum, he wrote, homology, similar forms in different animals, an unsolved problem. He wrote that in 1971. He says, therefore, homologous structures need not be controlled by identical genes, and homology of phenotypes does not imply similarity of genotypes. And he made that emphasis. He underlined it or bolded or whatever. It is now clear that the pride with which it was assumed that the inheritance of homologous structures from a common ancestor explained homology was misplaced. He said they jumped to that conclusion, but we've checked it out. Not such. For such inheritance cannot be ascribed to identity of genes. Different animals have different genes that produce the same-looking structures. But if it is true that through the genetic code, genes code for enzymes that synthesize these proteins, which are responsible, in a manner still unknown in embryology, for the differentiation of the various parts in their normal manner, what mechanism can it be that results in the production of homologous organs? What process creates similar structures in completely different animals, unrelated animals? And he asked the question, he says, I asked that question in 1938, and it has not been answered. He says that in 1971. The author of these articles says, nor has it been answered since. Hasn't been answered even to today. How can that be? What process are we looking at here? And then back to Gavin De Beer, he says on another page, structures as obviously homologous as the alimentary canal, the tube that takes the food into the stomach. Alimentary. Alimentary, my dear Watson. The alimentary canal in all vertebrates, people with back structure, animals with vertebrae with backbone, structures as obviously similar as the alimentary canal in all vertebrates, can be formed from the roof of the embryonic gut cavity, like sharks. It can come from the floor of the embryonic gut, like lampreys and newts. I always like the word newt. Somebody called us, you're a newt. Who did that?
My grandmother.
Your grandmother called me a newt. It comes from the roof and floor in frogs. That's what develops into the alimentary canal. Or from the lower layer of the embryonic disc, the blastoderm, that floats on the top of heavily yolked eggs. Both reptiles and birds, their alimentary canal comes from those places. Entirely different. He says, it does not seem to matter where in the egg or the embryo the living substance out of which homologous organs are formed comes from. Doesn't matter where it starts, it ends up looking the same. Therefore, correspondence between homologous structures cannot be pressed back to similarity of position of cells. Beginning cells are not alike. So you can't argue it back to that. You can't argue it to an evolutionary process. Back to the similarity of position of cells of the embryo or parts of the egg out of which these structures are ultimately differentiated. So a lot of complicated things there, but you get the picture that there are certain things that happen that they have no example of it in the what they call the earlier animals. Just happened. And we end with something like as basic as the alimentary canal. It just happens because it's necessary. The designer said so. But you can't work out where it comes from. It's not a process that grew and grew and grew. It just has to happen. It was designed that way. So, with that, we recognize their arguments no longer work. They've been there, they've looked at it, and so on.